I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. My name's Hannah Norris. I am your host and a pregnant woman. And many other things. And I'm here with my husband.
Carl Donnelly.
My co-host.
Co-host, husband, father-to-be.
Yeah.
That's it.
School. We went to school this week.
Yeah, I know. We went to NCT classes.
NCT school, which we will talk about in a little bit. This podcast is about pregnancy. That's what's been happening in our lives for the last 33 weeks. Currently at week 33 of the pregnancy, and we've been recording these episodes since week 6 because when I got pregnant, I realized I didn't really know anything, hadn't asked anyone, hadn't really paid any attention to any of my pregnant friends.
Realized we hadn't spent much time with babies. Yeah, no. We've got friends who've got kids and you sort of spend time with the kids, but actually the bit when they're babies, that's when you see them the least, obviously.
Yeah.
So actually, yeah, we realize we are fundamentally qualified.
Yeah, which I think everybody sort of is, but it was we're going to talk a lot about NCT, but
yeah,
those ideas about community as well, that's so different now.
Yes.
Sorry, that's a loud car, not a...
I think it was a motorbike or moped. I reckon that was a...
Things about community and the way that we live so differently now.
Yes.
And the way that we understand or know about pregnancy and then what to do with a baby.
Yeah.
Is a bit more mysterious.
Yes.
And I just want to say our little intro music is by a band called the Vaudeville Smash, who are one of my favourites in the world. They do the best live shows you've ever been to. It's so much fun. And I love them a lot. And they've been putting up some really cool videos that they've made over the years just on their Instagram and online. Yeah. They put one up the other day when they kind of did a sort of flash mob on a tram in Melbourne and just like had a little party. It was
cool.
It was really good. So that's their music. It gets in my head after whenever I listen to an episode. The song's called Daisy.
Yes.
We're at week 33 of pregnancy.
Yes.
Carl, do you know what size, what's like what absolutely massive fruit or vegetable it would have to be this week?
Marrow. I keep thinking marrow. No, it's never going to be marrow.
Nah, I don't think we even talked about it, actually. It's a cauliflower.
That's bigger than a cauliflower. Yeah. She's definitely bigger than a cauliflower now.
She might be as heavy as a cauliflower. Oh, I think it was the same as three pan of chocolats, three chocolate croissants or a cauliflower. How are they the same thing?
I don't think, yeah. And pan of chocolats, I don't think they're that big. It's very dependent on size.
Yeah. We eat pan of chocolats.
What are the company that we
get? Just Roll.
Just Roll do ones that are accidentally vegan, yeah. So we can eat them.
So they're really, you just cook them in the oven, take about 12 minutes and you have fresh homemade pan au chocolat. Yes,
other pan au chocolat are available.
Yes.
We don't have to say that, we're not tied down to any.
No, but they are accidentally vegan, which means that they have strange chemicals instead of butter and things like that.
Yeah, I don't fully advise them for health reasons.
But they taste good. And so this week I get to finish putting progesterone up my vagina.
Yeah. How many? You've done that
forever.
every night for
I don't know, like it'd be like, I probably started in like week 15 or something like that.
Was that when it was?
Yeah,
because you'd also done, you didn't do that during the run-up to IVF.
No,
that was the injections. But yeah, also was there not, oh, you were taking progesterone tablets, weren't you?
Yeah. Did I put something into, no, I no, just once, yeah, I had to do when we went in for the retrieval, I had to put something.
Yes. But so, yeah, you were doing progesterone tablets.
I can't remember.
Yeah. And then, it was when your cervix had slightly shortened to 2.5 centimetres.
Yeah.
that they thought it would be best. Yeah. So that, yeah, it would have been early, yeah.
Yeah, so probably about 18 weeks, however long that. It's so weird when you think about weeks all the time. I have no idea what that means in months. Over 4 months?
Yes.
Every night?
Yeah.
These little bullets. I know. Little bullets up the fan.
And last night was the last.
Yeah, it's going to be the last one.
That's good.
I'll miss them.
Really?
I'll feel a bit like...
What's become part of the routine, I suppose, an evening routine.
And something we've...
Brush your teeth, whack the thing up your fanny.
Yeah. I've had such a good pregnancy, like talking to people or listening to other people's stories. You know, I feel really fit and healthy and emotionally, hormonally really stable and normal. And there's those things like by having that progesterone by stopping it, is something suddenly going to change?
Oh, yeah.
You know, those sorts of things. Like have I just been on a drug, which I have been.
Yeah.
That's made everything fine.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I've not thought about that.
Am I about to go mental? So we'll find out. But yeah, I just kind of double checked this morning as well online because I looked at my notes and there's nothing in there that tells me to stop at 30 when I hit 34 weeks.
Yeah.
So I just did a little Google and it seemed to be that's what they say, that if you're at risk of preterm birth, which is what if your cervix shortens too much is one of the reasons you could give birth prematurely. They say you have to stop at about 34
yes.
or 34 to 36 weeks. So I'm doing it.
Well, I suppose you're only a few weeks now from technically full term.
Yes, which is 37 weeks we've learned.
And obviously you need to start, isn't it? Progesterone halts the colostrum starting to grow. I know my stuff now. I've become a real expert in pregnancy.
Yeah. This week as well, I've washed a whole load of baby clothes.
Oh my God. So we got given so many.
It's so great. I'm so thankful to have been gifted a whole load of baby clothes.
Yeah.
Which, I just washed everything because I brought some back from Australia and got given some here.
Yeah.
And just that kind of gave me a chance to look at them and see what sizes they are and what we have. We've got a chest of drawers full.
Yes.
Now, pretty much.
We've basically, it looks like we've got her covered from birth to about one.
Yeah.
9 months, maybe.
There'd be some recycled outfits then, but particularly the early days, that was what I was like, what do you buy? Because you don't really know what size they're going to be.
Yeah.
But thankfully, from being gifted stuff, we've got like tiny things, which I just don't imagine she's going to fit into.
No, I think she's going to come out a bit bigger than that.
Slightly smaller, and then there's, you know, what seems might be her size, but that idea of when you pack the hospital bag, have a couple of options rather than it being the kind of massive school blazer vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
When you just have to buy them something to fit into for a while. Another thing we started doing the last few days was looking at names again.
Yeah, we realised that's an odd one because we sort of settled on a couple of options months and months and months ago, and it was just totally forgotten to discuss it since.
Yeah.
And it was during NCT when people brought up names that we suddenly were like, oh, we've not even re-looked at the ones we...
Yeah, which I still like them. You still like them?
Yeah.
And it's like, but there's that feeling of what if that's not what she seems to be when she comes out.
Yes, there is that. Yeah, everyone says, you know, I've heard it's quite a common occurrence that they have a name in mind and then the baby comes out and it just does not suit them at all.
Yeah.
So I think it's having some backups is a good idea.
Which include, like, I think we looked at lists of like... What were some of the lists you were looking at?
I was looking at Irish names, Welsh names.
Yeah.
I looked at some Greek and Roman goddess names.
Yeah.
I just went on a bit of a journey.
Yeah, I looked at like hippie bohemian names.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Planet. Sure, you got to space at some point.
I started looking at certain astrological things and also Uranus's moons have all got cool names. I went a bit crazy.
Yeah, so we've expanded our list a bit, which I think is good. Just to they're there and we can check in on them. Like I know I already looked at it again today and was like, oh well, I actually hate that one. There's no way that's going to be the name.
Yeah.
But we can, and because we used that app quite early on as well, didn't
yes.
we? A baby name that I made you. You were not particularly interested in doing it then, but I was like, there's this app you can get. It's called Baby Name App, and you use it like Tinder or whatever, that you swipe.
Yeah.
You swipe if you like a name.
And you both do it.
Yeah.
And you link it, and the ones where you match go into a list.
Yeah.
It's actually like a good name. It's just called like Baby Names or something.
Yeah.
But it's good if you both want to just independently, because that's that thing that I think some people can have this conversation, it can be quite tricky if
yeah.
they've got a name they're dead set on. But what that app's good for is if you can do it in quite a fun way where you both just individually go off and do your thing,
yeah,
and then now and again Ding. Check in and see when you've got a match.
Yeah,
it's so you don't even have to really mess around with the conversation, that if it's going to be something that might be a point of contention, you can just treat it as a fun little app exercise.
And their name, their international names as well. There's a, if you're Dutch, get on there. There's yeah. so many Dutch
Chinese names.
Yeah,
there was a period of time where I thought I might just pick a Chinese one to see if Hannah's yeah, into it.
Well, I mean, this is the time as well where Grimes and Elon Musk have just named their baby.
Oh my god,
whatever that name.
I don't know how to say it.
A12.
I don't even know how to say that symbol they've picked, the A with the little thing off the side.
Well, this is, I saw Grimes's explanation of what it was.
Yeah.
And it's, that's how she, something to do with AI, like artificial intelligence. It kind of represents that. And it's also I, which is love. I think I is love in Japanese, actually.
Okay.
And then the next thing was like their favorite aircraft, like SR-12 or something like that. And then the last, I can't remember what the last thing is. But when I'd seen that the tweet, she'd said, she'd talked about the aircraft, and Elon Musk mansplained and corrected her on the actual aircraft.
I can't help think, and this, you know, I don't like judging anyone who's, you know, ultimately you have to pick your child's name. They're not in a position to pick their own. But you've also got to think, if you've got to explain what their name means that much, they will have to. So, you know, there's certain things.
Yeah.
There's a difference between picking a name and knowing that they're sort of lumbered with it, and if they don't like it, whatever. But picking a name that actively takes that much explanation,
yeah,
if you have to do that, then it's safe to assume that they're gonna have to do that every time somebody asks their name.
But doesn't it, like, I knew what my name meant. Hannah means God has favored me.
Yeah.
And I knew that as a kid, and I loved knowing that, but my friends didn't know what their name
I didn't know
meant.
What mine.
Do you know what it means?
I can't remember. I think it means man or something, and like it's just boring. My parents are just boring choices.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what my name meant when I was young.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of having a name that means something.
Yeah.
But I also like the idea of having a name and or middle names where they can choose.
Yeah.
And also something that doesn't take too much explanation. I just think you're setting them up for more admin than is necessary. Mm. And I think sometimes picking a name that is so crazy that it's been designed by the parents, and that it takes all this explanation, isn't, I think that's quite an egotistical thing to put on put on a little kid.
I think the explanation thing is more, I think the problem comes more in people trying to pronounce it.
Yes.
Where it's hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Again, I saw a few tweets about that with people, you know, saying all these, that fucking weird Grimes name and then other names, but then the teacher still can't say the Chinese kid's name.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's like
Irish
come
names,
on.
Notoriously
yeah.
difficult to pronounce for the English.
Yeah.
Because of the difference in letters in the Gaelic languages.
Yeah, they look fucked up.
Yeah, of course.
There's something in that though.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels to me like a little secret language when I learn how to say one of them.
Yeah. But I really like the name Niamh.
Yeah.
N-I-A-M-H, which sounds crazy when you say it in English. But it's a lovely name.
Mm.
But yeah, I also think ultimately we live here and, you know, and or at some point we might end up in Australia or something. Them names, yeah, I wouldn't want to call her Niamh because I just think she's going to have to keep going. No, it's Niamh. It's Niamh. So I think you have to sort of park your ego a bit and just give them something that they won't have to constantly explain.
But you also know in Australia they're going to get a nickname.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
Definitely.
Also this week, I felt hiccups for the first time. I think I felt her get the hiccups. But it was also in the middle of the night, so I just really don't know if any of it happened. I was very sleepy and I woke up in the morning and I was like, yeah, she had hiccups. And then it just, I thought I'd looked stuff up on my phone, which I'd checked my phone and I hadn't looked it up. So I don't know if it was all a dream. But yeah, this kind of, yeah, I think it was hiccups. Because that's something that's supposed to have happened. But I also then acknowledge that I don't really get hiccups. I love hiccups. I don't get them.
You get what? We've realised we both get similar ones. We don't get actual hiccups where it's
a continuous.
We tend to do one big hiccup that is so loud.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I used to always say that, yeah, I loved, if I get hiccups, I'd get one and get so excited to get the next one. Like, I'm not talking about when I'm a kid. I'm talking about when I was 25. I remember this. Get a hiccup, get so excited, get the next one. And then they'd stop and I'd be like, it's because I love them so much. Yeah, they just leave me. Bleak.
If you love something, you've got to let it go. That's what they say. If you truly love something.
Yeah. Bye. We also tried to watch an episode of a new BBC show called Life and Birth. We tried to watch that last night, but it was a bit too graphic.
I think. It was a bit too.
It's in the hospital, like it's. I mean, it's probably along the lines of that one born every minute thing, which we haven't watched.
Yeah.
And it's not particularly about. I don't know. Like, I don't really watch those hospital shows. I'm not that attracted to it. But I don't particularly want to see, I just want to do it.
Yes. I also think there's a danger of watching too much of that. You get a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because it is all very sterile hospital images and people coming in and out of wards and, like, you know, a lot of machines and beeps. And I just think, you know,
bright lights.
That's what I think creates a lot of the negative ideas some people have of pregnancy.
Yeah.
When that's not the case for every birth, is it? That's one type of birth. Probably the most common in the UK, but... You know, there's still a big percentage of people that don't go through that style.
And I guess that thing, I'm sure they'll show a selection and a variation of births, but how much, like, if someone's going for a real private kind of, you know, a private birth in a dimly lit room, you can't have a camera crew.
Well, exactly. The actual show is hampered by the fact that a lot of the people who are having births, they want to try and keep it a bit more personal and natural, aren't going to let them film. Yeah. So you're not probably going to get to see those.
Yeah.
And what was you described one of the partners quite graphically as a
useless piece of meat.
Yeah. He was just such a, he just didn't know what to do, poor guy.
The woman giving birth, her mum was there, like holding her hand.
And her best friend.
And he was just lumping around the room.
Friend was filming the whole thing, while literally laughing while her friend was screaming and stuff. And yeah, he just didn't have a clue, did he, the poor guy?
No. And you thought I'd called the woman giving birth a useless piece of meat.
Yeah, I thought you'd just really gone in hard on her while she was struggling.
And I've decided I've stored it up. So.
Yeah, that's it.
That's something that I'll say in labour. but yeah, so the main thing we did this week that we wanted to talk about is we are now complete childbirth, child rearing experts. Because we did our NCT course, which my dad emailed this morning saying we've talked about NCT in a previous episode. Was that NTT or NCT?
No.
Is it National Childbirth Trust? So that was his subtle way of making me explain what it is.
Yes.
NCT, National Childbirth Trust. They are one of the organisations who offer antenatal classes in the UK. So you can... connect with other people in your area who are having babies and learn some stuff off some people.
It's basically going to a proper hardcore antenatal school for like 3 days essentially.
Yeah.
But you also, the offshoot of that is you meet people that are due in and around the same sort of 3 weeks, 4 weeks as you.
Yeah.
So you hopefully will have some people that you will know in the area with kids to have a little support network.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. And it is, you know, it is... When you actually look at it, I suppose it looks quite expensive, you know, so it is, I think there's sort of, views that it's sort of like a slightly middle class option, which if you can afford it, obviously if something is expensive, then it does exclude people. But having done it, I would say it's intense. You learn so much.
Yeah. And that there are like, because the hospital offers courses as well. There are other options out there too, but we'd been recommended this, you know, but again by Felicity at the very early days when she'd just had her NCT. And obviously it's different for us because it was all over Zoom because we're all still in lockdown. Yeah. So that, I mean, that puts a really interesting part to it that we haven't actually met each other, you know?
No, it's kind of a, it definitely puts a little barrier between that natural thing of meeting people in person, making friends.
Yeah, actually being in the room with these four other pregnant women and partners.
Yeah. Well, you let your guard down and you can make eye contact. And there's just things that I think the natural human contact is lost.
Yeah.
But everyone's super nice still. Yeah. And like you can still tell if people are nice just even via Zoom, can't you?
And what I was thinking, you know, like it's kind of that speed dating vibe.
Yes.
Like you're kind of meeting people. And I never really have done any of that, like that dating kind of online. Online-y stuff, so it's novices. How do we attract them to us? but I realised I just looked in my notebooks. I've taken 17 pages of notes.
Yeah, you were. I mean, that thing is, you were scribbling away, even though they were clearly going to send the information afterwards on PowerPoint.
Oh, we got 5,000 links and emails.
Yeah, well. There's so many that actually, I think making the notes was a good thing to add on top.
I've learned that is actually how I learn best. When people talk to me and I write notes, that's when I retain information. Because even these, like the fact that we've been reading quite a lot of books, I can't necessarily, like I know it's gone in there, but I don't necessarily just go, oh, this is what I've just learned from this. So we had two full days, which were 9:30 till 4 o'clock on Zoom.
Yeah.
And after that, we both said how tight.
Oh, my God. Everyone the next day was saying, like, the first day, I think, caught everyone off guard.
Yeah.
Second day, I think we were a bit more prepared for what we were in for, so it wasn't as harsh. But, yeah, everyone on day two was saying that they just crashed after the first day.
Yeah.
It was a proper long school day, wasn't it? Intense intake of information.
And then we had another, a third day, which was all about breastfeeding.
Yes.
That was 9:30 to 1:45 or 2 o'clock. So I was just thinking about talking through some of the stuff that...
Yeah. And also, I suppose the schedule of it was... Day one was sort of birth plans, wasn't it? Build up, birth plans, options of birth. And then day two was more, once you've got the baby home, them early weeks and months.
Yeah.
And then obviously breastfeeding was its own thing because it's such a big concept and discussion.
So one of the things I had was about 96% of babies don't arrive on their due date.
Yes.
Which is kind of known, but that when you're full term, is it? It's 37 weeks to 42 weeks.
Yes.
So it's actually a 5-week window that everything's like, okay, this is, your baby's ready now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that a lot of first-time mums, it's kind of 40 weeks to 41 weeks.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a late baby, as they say in the hypnobirthing book.
It's Carl's mantra.
It is my mantra. I really like it.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that I like, because I think it's that learning, that hearing the word due date, I think has created a culture of, oh, that's when it has to come out.
Yeah.
And I like that concept of, no, there's a window of probably 6 weeks that baby, when it's ready, will come out.
Yeah.
That's much more. I like that.
Yeah. And then one of the things I found from the first day was about the stages of labour.
Yes.
About stage. There's a first stage.
Yeah.
Which that's active established labour that can take up to 10 hours.
Yeah.
And that's when you're getting dilated.
Yep.
I think it was, we get four to ten centimetres dilated.
That doesn't mean your waters are broken. Your waters might not have broken at that point, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
that
possibly.
They don't have to have broken to be in the first stage.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm just basing mine off memory.
But you're getting contractions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
5 to 20 minutes, every 5 to 20 minutes, and they last for at least 30 to 45 seconds.
Yes.
And then you go into a transition, which takes 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's when you're 9 to 10 centimetres dilated. And the contractions last up to 90 seconds and they come every 2 to 3 minutes.
Yes.
And then the second stage is the pushing one.
Yeah.
That's when adrenaline kicks in as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that can last from a few minutes to 2 hours.
Yes.
So it's like that's the actual push. That's when the baby's coming, isn't it? That's when the head's going to start coming out.
Yeah.
And then the third stage is when you give birth to the placenta.
Yes.
And the membranes.
Yeah.
just for me, kind of having those ideas of timelines for that was like, okay.
Yeah.
So even knowing that the pushing section, yeah, from a few minutes to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like that's still, I can comprehend that spectrum.
Well, yeah, because it's like, but because what does that, when somebody says they had a 24-hour labour, 36-hour labour, does that just mean the first stage, the early parts of the first stage were much more dragged out? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably when you start feeling contractions, yes. Right? Like, so getting into that, that's prior to that first stage, because that's, yeah, the first stage is when you are 4 to 10 centimetres dilated.
Yeah, so it must be when you're just below. From what I gather, some people have been in quite a lot of discomfort and feel like they're much further along, and then they find out they're like 1 centimetre dilated. So yeah. I suppose that's what can drag it out for much longer, is when that early bit is a bit more tricky, but isn't actually, you're not even in the first stage.
Yeah, you're not in labour.
Yes.
But that as well is that some people can kind of go into hospital and it's wait. They're like, you're not ready to be here yet. You're not actually in labour.
Yes.
Because we're not at that stage. Your contractions are still too far apart.
Yep.
Even if you're feeling it and it's happening, it's not really happening.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's interesting. Very. And some people in that, you know, books that I've read, some people can just go to sleep in that bit.
Yeah.
Which is, you said to me the other night when we were asleep a couple of nights ago and you felt we were lying close to each other and you could feel...
really banging around.
Yeah.
So I've said that, asleep. I told you the other day about my little secret late night chats.
A little bit.
Yeah. Basically, so sometimes you sleep, when you're asleep... You go to sleep before me, and nowadays I tend to carry on reading for an extra half an hour or something, and then you're leaning on me, and there's a lot of times in the last couple of weeks where you've been asleep, and she's banging, and because of the way you're leaning, she's banging on me.
Yeah.
And it sort of feels like we're having a little sneaky chat behind your back.
It's all right, you're allowed. Yeah, yeah, well, yeah.
We're not talking about you. but yeah, honestly, the other day, she did one that was such a, like, again, you know, normally it's like she's banging and I can have a little feel.
Yeah.
But I felt not a bang. It was a push. And it was almost like sort of, you know, running your elbow down or, you know, something. I felt her really lean out and down. It was weird.
Yeah. And you were surprised that I was just asleep.
You were just sound asleep.
Which is what, you know, again, comparing how I'm going with other people, you know, I pretty much sleep. I might get up once to go to the toilet, but...
Yeah.
I sleep through the night, really.
Yeah. But how you would sleep through that? That is.
Yeah.
Like, I it would have woken me up if I'd have felt that prod on me.
Yeah.
And I, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was inside you.
And that's the thing at the moment. I keep thinking, I feel like she's sideways.
Yes.
Which is what I was as a baby. That's why my mum had to have a cesarean, because I was transverse. But we'll see, you know.
She might be just moving on her way down to the right shape.
Which is now, because from kind of stopping the progesterone, I'll be more encouraging of that idea.
Yes.
Rather than just not encouraging. So that were the stages of labour. The other thing that we kind of then went into little groups at one point on Zoom and talked about the different kind of drugs that you can take in labour. Now, people who've been listening to this, know that I'm very much, the whole way through, I'm like, I want it to be as natural as possible. And we're looking at home birth. Don't know if that's an option, but I haven't really considered optional drugs or epidurals or anything like that. And we were in a group with two other people and they both already knew they're having an epidural the moment they get to hospital.
One for definite for health reasons. They've been advised. And I can't remember the other. Was it similar? There was a reason. There was a purpose to it.
I think she was just wanted to have an epidural.
No, just nervous. It was really interesting because, like, again, and this isn't a judgmenty thing. It was, but it's just that thing of I've just spent 8 months, whatever, listening to you talk about it, because you haven't even raised that as an issue. I forgot that actually it's very, very common.
Yeah.
You know, people just like, no, I just want it to go as pain-free as possible. Baby, get out, and then we can actually get on with our lives. That's the most normal way of looking at it, I think, in our culture.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I don't feel judgmental towards it at all. I was surprised because I've been so like you're saying, just on my own path about it and what I've been thinking about, what I want it to be. It's like, oh, right, okay. And then it seemed, when we joined back with the rest of the group, it was definitely... seemed that that was more of the vibe there.
Well, I think it's more of the vibe in general. Yeah. I just do think we just forget that we're a couple of bloody hippies.
Mm-hmm. So learning about the different stages of drugs as well, which is what I had... Also, I had no idea about it because I haven't asked any questions about it.
And gas and air, that's the one thing that really surprised me was gas and air is obviously seen as the like bottom layer.
Yeah.
Right, that's you'll get that. Everyone gets that. But, you know, then that's not really painkilling. But then the Rachel who held the NCT class, she was saying that gas and air, when you actually think about it, that's still a pretty strong... pain relief, you know, that's what they use for broken bones.
That's what they use in A&E.
Gas and air is your go-to pain relief.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nitrous oxide. It is strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyone who's tried it in the past. So, like, we forget that because I think people think of it, a pregnancy is such a different, such extreme thing.
Yeah.
That gas and air can't, they think that couldn't possibly hurt. But anyone who's broken a bone will know that can be painful. And gas and air relieves that, so...
And that's kind of the first level of drug that you can go for. The second one was diamorphine or pethidine.
So that's like a morphine-based.
Yeah.
That's pretty hardcore painkiller. That'll get you.
It's not as strong as morphine.
No.
It's like it's a diamorphine.
Diet morphine.
Diet morphine.
Morphine zero.
But that it can make the birth come on sooner because it relaxes you.
Yes.
But it can also, I think it can cross the placenta to
it
the baby.
Can, yeah, yeah.
So the baby can come out a bit dopey.
Yeah.
Because it's just had a head of horse. But that's kind of the next one that you can go to. And then epidural is after that.
Yeah. An epidural is one where basically you're numb from the waist down.
Yeah.
So yeah, they guide you through the birth, and that is the one that is pretty much pain free, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people still feel sort of something, and that whole thing about there's only windows where you can elect to have it. That it might be too deep into your labor for it to be make any impact.
Yes, one of them ones where you've got to really ask for it early doors, and they've got to make sure everything's okay to do it.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
In thinking about that stuff as well, in relation to what these drugs are used for in other circumstances. I'm sort of late to go to the doctor if I've got something wrong with me. I just go, let's write it out and see what's happening. If I've got a cold, I'll go for ginger and lemon before I go for cold and flu tablets. If I've got period pain, I'll kind of just ride it out. But then with all those things, the moment I take a cold and flu tablet, I'm like, oh, that really works. That's
great.
The moment I take a paracetamol when I've got period pain, I'm like, oh, there, it's gone now. So that's a good thing.
Yes.
So sort of looking at different areas. And if I had a broken bone, I wouldn't be going into hospital going, I'm just going to deal with this naturally.
Yeah.
I'd be like, but give, yeah, whatever you want to make the pain go away while you fix it.
Yes.
I'll do that.
But I think having that malleability is the, that's the best way of going into it, isn't it?
Mm.
No, that's why people say have a birth plan, then be willing to throw it in the, out the window and have a second one. And like, so your first birth plan is all natural.
Yeah.
Bloody me playing my hippie music and banging my Tibetan singing bowls and, you know, you just breathing and the baby just pops out. And,
yeah,
and
slides.
You know, so that's obviously the, an unobtainable almost dream, but it's still, that's, yeah, it's ideal.
Attainable.
Always have an ideal option as like, that would be what you like the most.
Yeah.
But then the fact that you're not dead against, or like, you know, you're not somebody who's saying, no, I will not have an epidural. If there's complications, you know, you're malleable enough that you'll go with the doctor's advice.
And if that complication is just like, it really fucking hurts, I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
that will get solved.
And actually, and I think that NCT, hearing people just talk about their options, and like, I think hearing other people say, no, I'm planning on this, or I've been advised this, and actually you suddenly realise, oh yeah, of course. There's so many other options.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. one of the next things I like that stood out to me that we talked about was poos and wees.
Yes.
What's the poos, Carl?
Well, there's three early stages of poo, isn't there? There's first couple of days, it's very sticky and dark, meconium.
Yeah.
Then it moves into sort of almost a dark green, slightly lighter normal stage for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then what you want by about day six is quite a runny, light brown.
Like a mustardy kind of
colour. Yeah. And then sort of in numbers wise, is it, you want a couple the first day? Basically, by the end of the first week, what you want is about a couple of poos, about five wees.
Six wees.
Basically, it's around the number of days to wees.
Yeah.
And then a couple of poos.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Do you know what? The more we've looked and talked about it, and I don't know. Maybe it is the fact that it's an information thing that I'm learning more, or it is a genetic thing as the reality gets nearer, my body is prepared. But it's not. I'm not feeling as uncomfortable about it as I would have done a month ago.
Yeah.
So I think I'm getting on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's this thing as well that kind of photographing the nappies as well.
And we've also, this week, I've painted a blackboard sort of into it. We've got this...
it's an airline trolley.
It's an airline trolley. We turned into a bar.
Yep.
Because
it locks very securely and it means that kids can't get into it.
We were going to get rid of it, but we worked out it's a really good option to keep our booze in. And I've painted each side with blackboard paint. So it's now like a sort of quite cool blackboard we can write on. And that's where we're going to, early days, keep note of wheeze, poos.
Boobs.
Yeah.
General.
It's going to be your scorecard.
Yeah. We'll share it on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the other thing was the cord, when the cord falls off.
Yes.
You go home and the cord's still on there.
Yeah,
10 to 12
days. Yeah, it can be up to that long and it just goes sort of black and just falls off and you just put it in the bin.
Yeah.
Because that was
that
funny.
That was Carl's first question.
She asked any questions about the cord and I just couldn't help myself. I went, when it falls off, do you just put it in the bin?
Yeah.
And then you weirdly asked a similar question about the colostrum. If you do colostrum harvesting. Yeah. She said any questions you went and then you just put it in the bin. I feel like all the other couples were like, them two are really obsessed with putting stuff in the bin.
Otherwise I hold on to it forever and we'll have, that's my friend Willow, her kids are over 20 now, but I know that she kept the placentas and that she had twins.
Yeah.
Mate, do you get 1% or 2%? I don't know. She kept the placenta and it was in her mum's freezer at least for 12 years. I don't know if they're still there or if she finally did something with them, but she kept the placenta. She's just like, she was living in a teepee and stuff. She's proper hippie. Yeah. I always remember that the placentas were in her mum's freezer.
Oh, my God.
Another one I remember at school, my friend Lauren, her mum had a baby. We were 14 and her mum had a baby with a new partner and that in her freezer she had condoms full of water that were frozen.
Why?
That she was going to put up her fanny when she was in labor to cool it down.
Oh my God.
I think she had a home water birth as well. It all kind of happened, you know, we weren't involved. But I remember, yeah, in Lauren's freezer, there were all these condoms with water, full up of water.
Yucky.
Might Google that, see what that was about. The growth of the brain, of the baby's brain.
Yeah. Omega-3. Apparently get your omega-3s in.
Mm-hmm. Because that's good for brain development, yeah. But that it goes from the size of, I think, a cherry.
Oh, yeah. In the first 6 months.
No. So the brain was a satsuma at 6 months.
Yeah.
To an orange. And then by 18 months, it's mango.
Yes.
And if the rest of the body was growing in the same way, they'd be like 4 foot.
Yeah. Just tall at 18
months.
18 months. 4 foot toddler.
Yeah. That was a thing.
Because what was the stomach? There was a stomach size chart as well, which was a cherry, wasn't it? To begin.
A cherry on day one.
And then
it went to... I'm not on that page in my notes yet.
Oh, sorry. I've just jumped forward in my mind.
It went to something else. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
It was a cherry on day one and can only take in 5 mils of liquid.
At one time.
Yeah.
And it passes through quite quick.
That's why they do. That's why they need to feed so much because they've got a tiny cherry stomach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then on day two, it's already a walnut.
Yeah.
Taking about 25 mils.
Yeah.
By day seven, it's about the size of an apricot, taking in 50 mils.
Yeah.
And then by 1 month, it's the size of an egg.
Yeah.
And can take up to 150 mils at the most.
Yeah.
And so that was a thing that our breastfeeding guide.
A guru. Our breastfeeding sage.
Our breastfeeding guide, Sage Suru. she said that a lot of formula, they will have, that a baby should have a 250 ml bottle.
Which for 6 months is just massively overfeeding.
From 1 month onward, they can only take in 150 mils.
Yes.
So that's has impacted on the kind of obesity epidemic because babies' stomachs are getting stretched and kids' stomachs getting stretched so much.
And it teaches, in terms of learning to eat and intake, it just makes your self-regulation ability lesser, doesn't it? Interesting stuff.
That was the. Was there anything else from the first couple of days that you really felt stood out in your mind?
No, I think it was no. Because I think there was so much information. I thought it was all brilliant, but a lot of it is stuff we've sort of looked into a bit during the doing of the podcast and talking to people and hearing a lot of birth stories. It was stuff that I knew a bit about, but it was getting the science behind it and all the genuine understanding, and just them first sort of, you know, that first few weeks and months.
The first 6 weeks seems to be that after 6 weeks is when things start to chill out.
Yes.
Was the real like?
Yeah, that's when they get into a routine and you know, naturally their own routine. You know, it's not a thing if you've not forced a routine. If you just go with it for the first 6 weeks, it can be hard and knackering. But actually, babies start forming their own routine then.
Yeah.
And that's when you start working out what you're doing a bit. And so that first 6 weeks is a blur.
That you're both learning about each other, yeah.
Yeah. So I think just hearing somebody talk you through it, just leaving the hospital and going home and, you know, things like that, it was just really, you know, I found it very calming and, you know, not like I've been stressed about it, or I don't think you have. I think we're both going into it really, like, calmly. But I think even just hearing about it even more in a much more time frame thing from this is what will happen once you go into labor.
Yeah.
To here's what you'll probably be like in 6 weeks after the birth.
Yeah.
Just over 2 days quite extensively really just made me go, oh yeah, it's manageable. It's totally manageable. Yeah.
And it's that thing of kind of sitting down with a professional who knows lots of stuff. And then just that idea, particularly like, because when we had to ask questions of what we wanted to find out, mine was mainly, what do you do once you got a baby?
Yeah, that and can we put things in the bin? That was our questions. But it was, I suppose, yeah.
And that's definitely made, I feel more confident about that kind of stuff.
I think so. I do think, and again, this goes from just talking to everyone we've talked to and watching you get ready.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of pregnancy is spent sort of like planning for the birth,
yeah,
you know, prepping, maybe stressing a bit or getting nervous and trying to work out a way of getting through what is going, what is deemed a very tough experience, and then it's spent thinking about, right, how are we going to get the baby into a sleeping pattern, and you know, things like feeding patterns, and like, you end up, I think you jump that first 6 weeks, a lot of people,
yeah,
they don't think about the initial, we're just going to be lying around on a sofa,
boobs out
a baby, we have no idea what we're doing. Like, that first 6 weeks probably is going to be the most extreme and crazy in terms of, like, your life goes from, there's two of you, and yeah, for the last sort of 6 weeks, 2 months, you might lose a bit of mobility and things, but actually you're still just sitting around watching telly and making food, and suddenly there is just other person.
Yeah.
So that first 6 weeks, I think, is the most, probably the least talked about.
Yeah.
From what I gather.
Yeah. And I think maybe because it is a, because they are quite personal relationships as you get to know this new person and what they need and how they respond, how you respond to each other. That's one of the main things about this course, is a lot about responsive parenting. So it's not about kind of assuming or trying to find a schedule and put it onto the baby, but sort of the idea, a lot of it, that the baby will tell you what its needs are, and to be sort of open and responsive, and that is not going to fuck them up later on and make them the boss of you and make them too attached to you. It actually makes them more secure.
Well, that's what, and it goes into the breastfeeding yesterday. And weirdly it ties in. I've literally just about to finish it, How Not to Fuck Them Up, which is sort of the follow-up to one that I talked about on here months ago now, which was They Fuck You Up by Oliver James. And this is basically a parenting book from a clinical psychology side. And basically his whole ethos is responsive parenting. You know, then first, not just the first 6 weeks, but the first 3 years of your child's life.
Yeah.
He said you should, if you want the most well-balanced emotionally, mentally, physically, you know, just in terms of like creating a person who's going to function well, he said them first 3 years you should be responsive parenting the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, there's elements of structure you can put in, you know, but you've got to build it around them rather than around your schedule.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're going to cause some long-term damage. Which sound, he puts it in a quite harsh way, and I think it would be quite, I hate the word, but triggering for some people. Do you know what I mean? But what it is, it's quite a challenging view. He's putting it in very black and white language of, you know what I mean? This isn't about you anymore. You've brought a child into the world. This is about them. And so it's really interesting to read, and it's sort of, but in much nicer terms, the breastfeeding guru
Cordelia.
Yeah, she put it in much nicer terms of, you know, you've got to just let your baby lead you, in the sense of they're instinctively born knowing how to feed and things like that, and you've just got to react because you've got 40 years of conditioning, like, in the world, and like, in, you know, you've been hit with all this information about how difficult breastfeeding is and all this. So actually you've got probably more reticence about breastfeeding than the baby does.
Yeah.
So you've got to just let the baby lead it, almost.
And the thing she said to Google and look into was secure attachment.
Yes.
So that's kind of what you're creating, and that's the that's the idea.
Well, that's what Oliver James talks a bit about, insecure attachment, which is what a lot of children that seem very independent because they've been sort of left to their own devices a bit too much. You know, they were put in childcare very early and maybe were cried out a bit too early. And like, so these babies learn so young that they've sort of got to be self-reliant. And then they can sort of learn to have sort of more insecure attachments. And like,
the idea is that through kind of giving them security and responding to them, they actually become more, because they're secure, they become more independent.
Yes.
And the things that you might be trying to instill in them by giving them a routine and trying to, impose or put your own ideas on it, that can make them less secure and therefore more dependent.
Well, probably the bit I would say that would upset people the most reading that book is the bit about childcare, you know, especially like daycare, nurseries, where you're putting a child in with other kids at a very young age. Say you're going back to work and stuff. That's why I think it'd be quite challenging, because it could be read as mothers that go back to work are harming their children.
Yeah.
If it was read in sort of certain terms. But it says about they've measured cortisol levels in babies and, you know, babies that are sort of left to cry out and babies that are young, like, say, top 1 year olds who are sent to nursery, like very early, what's it, pre-nursery, whatever it is. So people, like, there was the New Labour brought in a thing called Sure Start, which was to help, like, single mothers and stuff going back to work. But actually they did tests on some of the kids and it showed their cortisol levels spiked the moment they were put into daycare, and they tested them when they're like, you know, 10 years old, 10 years later, and their cortisol levels were much higher than kids who weren't put in daycare.
Yeah.
So there's like, you know, it sounds harsh, but it also just makes you think that, fuck, we need, yeah, you just want to just smother the kid with as much love as possible and try and not.
Well, that was one of them, wasn't it? You can't overlove a child. You can't overlove.
Yeah.
Someone, one of them said something to do with that. But I also, I mean, I've just learned recently as well, in America, kind of for maternity leave, the general maternity leave can be 2 weeks or six insane. Weeks. So particularly people who might be in a circumstance where they're not, you know, they work at McDonald's or something like that, have a baby, and 2 weeks later they've got to go.
So they don't get the support.
No, got to go back to work and find someone to look after the kid for 8 hours. And
well, that's what he sort of single parents talks about is the sense of what's happened is we've created a society where women are expected to work very soon after their babies are due, because they're not given support, you know, really. Obviously, if you're in a job that's good enough that it's, and it's got maternity leave that is good enough, then you do get a certain amount of support. But a lot of women are, you know, that sort of are in jobs where they don't get the support, so they physically have to go back to work, and they're you know, we've given support to the babies to go into like daycares and nurseries, but what this book talks about is that we've sort of then retrospectively justified that as a good thing for the kids, rather than what it should be is an indictment on the society that has created a system where mothers don't get that first couple of years with their children.
And again, I think, you know, we have that lucky, again, I feel lucky about that situation in your line of work, you know, that it's not, and I mean, everything's different right now, but that you don't have a full-time job that you're supposed to go back to. And so say if I wanted to go to work or if I got something that came up, you know, in theory, you'd have days free or could adjust things.
Well,
so
yeah, our schedules could work around each other.
So that we can both work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, again, yeah, this comes from a place of we're lucky and privileged to have fallen into this lifestyle. But yeah, I think, you know, from reading this, I would be very, so I'd really want for them first 3 years at no point the baby to not be being looked after by one of us.
Yeah.
That's what he said. And he doesn't just say mothers. He's not saying it. What he means is primary caregiver. Yeah. So if, you know, if the mother goes back to work, it should be the father. It should be a close family member. It should be somebody they're totally comfortable with that is like is basically a replacement mother, but putting them into a big group of kids that are looked after by one person who can't give that baby total attention, really. Yeah. Then that's when it can cause long-term damaging effects. It's hard. It sounds scary when you read it. You're like, oh my god.
And it is that tricky thing, you know, because like the Cordelia, the guru, breastfeeding guru, she recommended a couple of books that we've bought already, because there is that thing, there's so many ideas and books and things out there, obviously, we're attracted to, and talking about things that we feel will work for us and come from a place of something that we agree with or can take on and want to take on. It's just I can't imagine how hard it would be if you read something like that and then you just like, I can't, how do I make that work? I can't do that. Like you were saying about someone who goes, well, am I damaging my child?
Well, disclaimer he does put in is, as long, or basically, he's not saying if you go back to work after 9 months or something, 6 months, then you're harming your baby. What he says is you have to work out a way that they are getting good enough replacement care.
Yeah.
Like he said that is the main thing you can do. So, because he said the actual danger, some mothers who aren't natural, you know, sort of aren't the sort of mothers who are just endlessly sort of smothering their baby. And that's just a personality type. There are some people that are much better parenting toddlers than they are babies, and vice versa, or better with looking after older kids. He said that actually, you know, the last thing you want that baby to have is a mother who's sort of resenting the fact they can't go back to work because they want their independence, and, you know, then they get depressed. And actually, you can have a mother at home who's depressed and in postnatal depression that will do more harm than if they'd gone to work and found a good replacement primary caregiver.
Yeah.
So actually, it's about, he's saying that, you know, it's about just finding whoever it is, be it mother, father, gran, aunt, whatever, a nurse or, you know, somebody,
nanny
type. You know, yeah, he says just if you're not going to be the best person to do it, then you've got to check your ego and find somebody who will do it better while you're at work, and accept that that actually is better for the kid, because you would have been more damaging. So again, it's hard to read. You read it and you're like, fuck, this is pretty brutal. But, you know, you're talking about the actual early day developmental science of a baby.
Yeah. And there is always the chance to repair things.
That's another thing he says. You can repair a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
With, like, you know, I've forgotten his phrase he uses, but it's about where you just basically overload them with love down the line and sort of smother them and try and sort of just get them back.
I remember a phrase from our breastfeeding thing yesterday that I've taken on board, which is, if you can drink and drive, then you can drink and feed.
Yeah, that was it's good.
That was about alcohol and caffeine intake while you're breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And kind of like, early doors, don't go mental, don't get drunk, but that you can have a drink.
Yes.
While you breastfeed, but that caffeine takes longer to go out of the system.
Yeah.
And she said it takes like 7 hours or something for the caffeine to leave your system. And so she's like, but you won't make that mistake again. If you drink too much coffee, you're going to have a wired baby and you just won't do it again because it's the worst.
Yeah.
But the booze doesn't seem to be as problematic. With the breastfeeding, I guess one of the biggest things that I'd said at the start of the session was that something for me that I know happens, but if someone's breastfeeding around me, I have that thing of going, that's cool, they can breastfeed, like, that's good. But I don't look. No. I don't watch the breastfeeding.
No, not at all.
So I realized I'd never really watched breastfeeding. I don't really know what it looks like.
It feels like a private thing to watch, even though it shouldn't be.
Well, it's just like, it's a part of the acceptance. Just going, that's what you're doing.
Yes.
I'm cool with it. I'm not going to make a big deal about that. I'm going to keep talking to you, eye contact.
But you're not going to physically stare at their boobs.
I'm not going to have a look
at
how the baby's, what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at your boob, basically.
Yeah.
Out of respect for you and what you're doing. So from that point of view, never really seen it, really. So watching some of those videos that she's shared, and it's all about how the baby has to get a mouthful of boob. It's not just the nipple.
I didn't know that. They have to,
and it goes right into the roof of your, past the roof of your mouth, which is, what was it? You put the knuckle.
Put your thumb along the roof of your mouth. And basically it's hard, 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 hard. And then you get to the bit where it's soft, right? Quite far back, almost at your gag reflex bit.
Yeah.
He said that's where the actual tip of the nipple should hit on the baby's mouth.
Yeah, that's how much boob they've got to get into their mouth.
Yes.
How deep it has to go for the milk to kind of just easily go down.
And for it to be in the position where the milk comes out smoothly.
Yeah.
Yes. That's fascinating.
Which, yeah, before now, I would, before being pregnant, I just would have thought you just went on the nipple, like,
and it just comes out.
But even the sounds, wasn't it? If you hear kind of those sounds, then they're not attaching properly.
Yeah.
Just kind of deep swallowing sounds.
Yeah.
And then about a bottle, like if you hold it vertically, basically they can't stop drinking it. So it's like making them skull the bottle, isn't it? So it will just keep going until they're finished, whereas you want it to be at an angle where they can actually suck the bottle
in,
as if they were trying to get milk out. That was one thing.
Yeah. I was really just, the thing that stuck with me was the fact that she said, is it 97.5% of mothers can provide enough milk for their babies you know, because often I think, again, this comes probably from a cultural thing and just the narrative that breastfeeding is sort of spoken about as if it's a tricky thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't do it. A lot of babies can't do it. Like, and actually what she said was that's just not true. Like, only 2.5% of mothers have actually a health issue that a baby does that means they can't feed via breastfeeding. And everything else normally is just a practical issue that could be, with support, could be fixed. But obviously they just don't really get the support as
such. Kind of like one of the first memes that she showed was about it being like a dance. Like you're a bit uncoordinated at first, but you just stick with it and you keep dancing and then you find, you know, you can do it after a while.
And that just, that was the thing. That was almost like the learning about the due date being just a bit of a myth. To me, that was like a thing. I was like, oh, that is essentially cultural programming. We're just told in, you know, in adverts for formula milk, make it suggest that breastfeeding is like, oh, that's probably won't work. It's tricky. Why not just use this? And like, you just realize you've sort of been hoodwinked.
Yeah. And particularly like she talked about in kind of evolutionary terms, which is something that I think we're both interested in. And so, for example, the reason why babies feed in the night, like when we were cave people, that's a safe, quiet time.
Yeah, when you're surrounded by your people.
Yeah, when everyone's in the cave with you, that it's going to be safe for the baby to be awake and take on food. And that's still programmed into the baby. Yeah, and that the other thing was the little experiment she got us to do, which was to look at the last 24 hours. Look at your own last 24 hours. And you make a little mark of every time that you ate or drank something. So if it's a sip of water or a biscuit or an apple or a full meal, whatever, like just to make a mark. I sort of misunderstood it. And so we just ticked for every hour of the day that we'd have had something.
Yeah.
And basically we gave ourselves 3 o'clock off and the time we were asleep. But apart from that, we basically, all day.
Yeah. Every hour, at least every hour with either drinking something, eating something, even if it's just water.
Yeah. If it's a cup of tea, if it's a coffee, if it's a drink of water, that to just show you how that's why a baby feeds so much.
Yeah.
Because they might be thirsty or they might be hungry or they might, like, it's suddenly 8 feeds in 24 hours. Yeah. Doesn't seem crazy.
They're a bit stressed and they want just something to chill them out.
Yeah.
That's what we do that.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that was a really good exercise.
Yeah.
Anyone who's listening and, you know, is in that thing of think like maybe worried about having to get up in the night and constantly feed a baby, just do it. Just note down everything and time that you eat and drink during the day, and you'll realize you to yourself are essentially constantly having to feed and drink, and a baby's no different. It just doesn't. It can't reach the fridge.
Yeah.
So
not necessary, but you're still doing it for different reasons, which is what they say the babies do as well. So yeah, they were like, there was so much more information in the breastfeeding thing, and the basic thing was just to give it a go, and it's so beneficial to the baby to be breastfed from kind of all the antibodies and the antiviral stuff they get from the breast milk.
Well, it was that little the table she showed us where, you know, a formula milk is food, isn't it? So you get protein and nutrients and stuff like that. But actually breast milk obviously has those, but it also has antibodies and all that they physically can't put into formula milk because the antibodies are created by the mother's body.
And I think the difference between there's baby-led breastfeeding and parent-led, mother-led breastfeeding. So the baby-led, basically, which is my plan now. You basically lie down and the baby just is on you and then they just crawl up when they
when they're hungry
and then they just feed and then you put them on the other boob and that's it. And months of lying,
weeks.
A few weeks just with my boobs out.
Yeah.
But lying it was down.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And it definitely, And she gave us like links to, there's like National Breastfeeding Helpline and things. There's actual numbers online that if people are struggling and do think it's something they just want to give up because they feel like they've hit a wall, there are support networks that are free, you know, that you can actually just call them.
It's quite those percentages from the amount of people who start breastfeeding, that was like 80%, how quickly they drop down.
Yeah, people give up before seeking help, essentially.
Yeah.
Because they assume they have some problem or the baby has some problem. And actually, like she said, call the breastfeeding helpline. Actually, you might be able to work out a way of making it work.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm a man telling you about breastfeeding.
Oh, God.
I'd like to rescind everything I've said and admit that I don't really know what I'm talking about.
No, but you've been told it by a woman who knows everything that she's talking about.
She was such a guru.
Yeah, she's a real guru. We liked her.
I did like her.
She, you could, there's a Northwest London breastfeeding group. It's a private group.
You've joined on Facebook.
Yeah, but you had to become her Facebook friend to join the group. And she's like, this is not a scam to just try and get more Facebook friends and you can unfriend me straight away. But I still kept her as my friend.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be her friend.
Oh, so yeah, that is This Week with Hannah and Carl, week 33. Which I was thinking, 33, if babies were 100 weeks in the womb, would just be a third of the way through.
Oh my God.
I hope that some of that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was to us.
Yes.
And I've got to look at my notes again to try and remember all the other things that I learned. But thank you for listening. I think we'll probably Zoom a guest.
Yeah. We'll work out some sound issues.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Thanks for sticking with us in the episodes that we've done so far with that. And we will speak to you again next week.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment
and tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times' best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains, mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.